Chapter 5. Poison ivy plagued me. My entire stay in South Jersey, I had the itches and bathed in calamine lotion, which made me look like a Delaware brave dressed in pink war paint. In the woods behind our house, an old Indian trail ran through a tangle of sassafras, dogwood, Virginia creeper, honeysuckle, poison ivy, and oak. My imagination lured me there, as I hoped to find lost Indian treasures. Unless I wore high socks, overalls, a long-sleeved shirt, gloves, and a hat, I was asking for trouble. But who's going to wear all that stuff in June and July? It seemed whenever I stooped to pick up an arrowhead or gather some herbs, I was knee-deep in toxicodendron. I'd been told that in New Jersey they cross the mosquitoes with crows, but a mosquito bite lasts 2 days, and a rash from the ivy, a month. The trail ran under a canopy of oak and chestnut and ended at a deserted cranberry bog. You could still see the effects from the turfing, a process in which the native plants are removed, dams built, and ditches cut to control flooding and divert the natural drainage. Beavers had moved into the area. Two nearby bogs, which some people call cedar bogs or swamps, had escaped turfing and remained in a natural state. Thick with cedar trees, they were also home to holly and pine, as well as laurel, inkberry, and the type of mosses sold to florists for packing material. When I first discovered them, I thought that a channel of some river or lake or an arm of the sea had been dammed. To a city girl like me, the bog seemed otherworldly. Limbless trees, 50 and 60 feet high, rose out of water colored like brandy by years of fallen leaves and the roots of the cedars. With their tops woven so closely together, they shut out the day, creating a perpetual twilight below. Fallen timber, stumps, and waist-deep ponds made passage nearly impossible. In calm weather, except for the occasional screams of herons and the chirps of small birds, the bogs were as silent as death. But when a breeze came up, the trees sighed mournfully as the mast-like cedars rubbed against each other, producing a variety of noises that resembled shrieks, groans, and the growling of wild beasts. Since only a few fragments of light pierced the gloom here, it was a good place to hide. I came to the swamps only rarely, though I frequently meandered along the Indian trail looking for arrowheads. In the short time I lived on the farm, I found 19 arrowheads and hundreds of spent .22 rifle shells. Hunters and target shooters used the woods for their practice, taking aim at the lids of paint cans which they nailed to the trees. Occasionally, I'd run into moonshiners, who generally stayed out of sight. They sold the locals home-cooked whiskies called Happy Sally and Jump Steady, reputed to cause paralysis of the tongue and internal bleeding. Price, $4 a quart. When the wind came up, the pungent odor of fermenting mash and alcoholic distillate led revenuers to stills and waste piles of prune pits, potato peelings, cherry skins, sugar beets, barley, cornmeal, and other grains. Consequently, if you came within eyeshot of the shiners, they'd unleash bad-tempered dogs or fire a warning shot over your head. It was best to leave them alone. Although the woods are home to many dark places and untold sins, they also house numerous treasures. Besides arrowheads, I would find remnants of birch bark canoes and Indian feathers and old causeways built out of logs and abandoned sawmills. I picked wild huckleberries and raspberries and saw snapping turtles and colorful birds like cardinals, Baltimore orioles, yellow warblers, and scarlet tanagers. Just a few miles outside of Carmel, an Indian trail ran through a forest of pines to the Morris River, with its sandy banks and dark cedar water. Mom and I swam in the river whenever we could free ourselves from the farm. Jake Narovlansky would pick us up in his wagon, pulled by a tired old horse that would cloppity-clop down the road. Hayrides, sponsored mostly by the factory workers, took place every Sunday. Normally, the moral bluenoses would have prevented such fun on the Christian Sabbath, but Carmel was a socialist community. Billy Sunday's chariot, as we called our hay wagon, would start in front of the Skillowitz candy store and slowly make its way to the river. Anyone was free to hop on.